Hello, I'm Mike Armstrong. This is number 0557, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0557. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress Carolyn Hennessy, who, in addition to playing lawyer Diane Miller on General Hospital, plays a television producer in a show within a show on Studio City. She also grew up as the daughter of an Oscar winner.
Oscar winning for Fantastic Voyage. He was the production designer, the art director. Dad's role on so many films, including that one and subsequent films like Logan's Run and Young Frankenstein and Annie. It's production designer. So yes, I'm the only girl, the only person that I know personally who grew up rehearsing her Oscar speech holding one. Lucky little me.
Theme park expert Pete Trabucco on how theme parks can survive in a post-COVID-19 world.
As far as the amusement park industry is concerned, this is I wouldn't say a death blow, but I would say that it is a situation where you probably will not see any new rides at attractions at any of the amusement parks for at least a couple of years as they recoup the losses that are going to be occurring, obviously, this year. I mean, in January, they stopped closing parks in Asia and in Europe, and then of course, we're not going to open here in the United States or in Canada probably for at least the next couple of months, or at least a month or two.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and on this edition of Book Banter, Peter and me will examine some confining books that you can read while you're self-isolating. So stay right there. Don't go anywhere. It's taking place soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0557, was Mike Armstrong, a reporter, and a great one at that, who works at Global National. You can watch him right across this country on Global National each and every night. And thank you very much, Mike, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? As leaders worldwide search for ways to encourage people to stay home during the coronavirus pandemic, officials in Indonesia are taking advantage of its citizens' superstitions. Kepu, a village on Java Island, is employing village residents to dress as pocong, or the trapped souls of the dead in Indonesian folklore. The ghostly figures, wrapped in white shrouds with their heads covered and dark-rimmed eyes peering out, surprise unsuspecting pedestrians, then disappear into the night. The strategy appears to be working. Villagers have been seen running off in fright when the pocong appear, said one local resident by the name of Karno Sapudmo. People will not gather or stay on the streets after evening prayers. Wow. Is this community ready to deal with the plethora of PTSD cases that's coming their way when this is all over? You know, this sounds like a bad episode of Scooby-Doo.
Like, why do we always have to come to spooky places at night?
Yeah, why don't we come back tomorrow? After lunch.
Or never!
93-year-old Olive Veronese of Seminole, Pennsylvania, wasn't shy about letting loved ones know what she needed during the lockdown. I need more beer, read a sign she held up, along with a can of Coors Light. A relative posted Olive's photo to social media, and her predicament went viral, said Olive.
I have a beer every night. I was on my last 12 cans. You know what? Beer has vitamins in it. That's good for you. Only don't overdo it.
On April 13th, she got her wish. Molson Coors delivered 10 cases of her favorite brew to her front door. Her new sign reads, "Got more beer." Wow. 10 cases. Olive sounds friendly. I'm sure she'll share.
That's how many there now. Do you want one?
But why do you have a beer every night, Olive?
Something to relax, you know. I think it's nice. Something for a young lady.
Young at heart, indeed. Party on, Olive. Party on. A baby born on April 6th in Bhopal, India, will carry a special name with him throughout his life. Lockdown. Manju Mail, his mother, confirmed to hospital staff, yes, he is lockdown, as he was born during the lockdown period. Her husband said, it is a significant name, the whole world using lockdown as a means to stem this pandemic. We should not take lockdown lightly. Meanwhile, in Chhattisgarh, India, another couple blessed their twins, born March 27th, with timely names, Corona and COVID. 27-year-old Preeti Varma said her children's names symbolize triumph over hardships. Indeed, the virus is dangerous and life-threatening, but its outbreak made people focus on sanitation, hygiene, and other good habits. You know, these three kids will never be able to go into stores and find those little license plates with their names on it for the back of their bicycles. Oh, the horror. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies responded to a home in Saugus, California on April 7th after a dispute over toilet paper turned violent. A 26-year-old man was arrested and charged with battery after his mother told deputies he had punched her. Sheriff's Department spokesperson Shirley Miller said the man had accused his mother of hiding toilet paper, which she admitted to deputies, saying her son was using too much. This is the first arrest I've heard of that started out over an argument over toilet paper, remarked Miller. Really? You've never heard of people fighting over toilet paper? Then you didn't grow up in the 70s.
That's him, Herman, the funny-looking one with the mustache.
I'll handle him. Hey, Whipple, you've been giving the missus a tough time for squeezing Charmin bathroom tissue.
But we don't squeeze new Charmin in the store.
Yeah, see, there's a sign.
A sign?
Please don't squeeze the Charmin.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Carolyn Hennessy is back on the show. Most of you will probably know her from her recurring role on General Hospital as Diane Miller. I still catch her in reruns of Cougar Town, where she played Barb. And most recently, she also stars as Gloria in the digital drama Studio City, which is on Amazon Prime Video. Whatever she's in, she's always a delight to watch. Carolyn joins us on the line from California. Hi, Carolyn.
Good morning, or is it afternoon where you are?
It's afternoon where I am. Nice to talk to you once again. It's been 5 years since we last chatted.
How long?
5 years.
No. You are incorrect, sir. I don't know the exact date, but that cannot be possible.
We were talking about your ABC series Revenge at the time.
Oh my gosh. Well, all right. Well, fine. Fine for you then. Yeah. I've missed you then. Yes, terribly.
You know, we've spoken many times, and we've talked about all the things you've done and all the things you're doing. We mentioned, of course, that your aunt is a Hollywood siren, Barbara Rush, who I had a crush on as a kid. But
right.
I don't think we ever mentioned the fact that your dad is an Oscar winner.
Oscar winning for Fantastic Voyage. He was the production designer, the art director. Yeah, the category is art direction when they hand out the Oscar. But dad's role on so many films, including that one and subsequent films like Logan's Run and, you know, Young Frankenstein and Annie, it's production designer. So, yes, I'm the only girl, the only person that I know personally who grew up rehearsing her Oscar speech holding one.
Wow.
So there's that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. Lucky, lucky little me.
With a Hollywood star for an aunt and an Oscar winner for a dad, was there any other occupation that you would have gone in? I mean, was it possible to even avoid the family business?
I didn't stand a chance. I was I was doomed. I was cursed from the beginning. From the moment I entered my first soundstage, it was like, that's it. We're done. Over and out. Y'all can figure out what you want to do going through puberty and junior high school and high school. I'm baked. I'm baked in. So there you go.
Wow. I mentioned one of your current roles, and that is playing Gloria in the digital drama Studio City, which is kind of a show within a show, right?
Yes. I mean, I think at first blush people might go, "Oh, it's a digital soap," which it most definitely is not. It is a dramedy. It's a serious comedy, if you will, about a soap opera actor. And so we see some of his world. We go into that world of the soap, but it in and of itself is not a soap. It just focuses on that. And I play. And it's so wonderful, by the way. It's wonderfully written, beautifully acted. Sean Kanan, Tristan Rogers, Sarah Brown, just lovely, so lovely to watch. And so I play Sean's producer, the executive producer of this, of the second most watched soap in America, this fictional Hearts on Fire. And it's this incredible, I think, realistic, slightly heightened slice of what it's actually like to be on a soap, to be behind the scenes of a soap. Because so many people think, first of all, so many people think that soaps are real. They're not. And that they're easy because the actors can make it look easy, but they're not. Not by a long shot. So yeah, that's what it is. And Gloria is so much fun to play because she's tough as nails. She's acerbic. She can be a little cruel, but there are reasons for her dysfunction, and we're going to get into them in the second season. So,
you talk about the difficulty of soap operas. I've said for eons that soap opera acting is some of the most difficult acting an actor will ever do, with pages and pages of dialogue each and every day. If an actor can do that, they can do just about anything. Now, with you playing the role of Gloria, you have done the role of Diane Miller for a long time on General Hospital. You know your way around a daytime soap. So, do any of the producers who work on General Hospital have to look around or look over their shoulder and say, "Wow, is Carolyn playing me?"
I am emulating. Let's see, and she'll understand this if she hears the whole sentence. Jill Fehrenfeld was one of the finest executive producers, and all of the good parts of Gloria are Jill. How about that? The rest of Gloria is basically taken from Olivia de Havilland and Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte. How's that?
Ooh, wow. Wow, that's a great role.
right? One of the best. Or my character in St. Agatha, where I played this basically psychotic nun, okay, this psychotic Mother Superior. So the best parts of Gloria, the caring, the toughness, but not the cruelty, I looked to Jill Fehrenfeld because she was phenomenal and so kind and so funny to me. You know, lovely.
Now, I've only seen clips of the show. I haven't seen any of the full episodes because, unfortunately, where I am, I don't have Amazon Prime. But judging from the clips I've seen, and of course, seeing you in General Hospital, and again, I adore Barb in Cougar Town. Seeing you in all of those roles, the one thing I find that your roles seem to have in common is your character seems to always really enjoy what they're doing.
Well, absolutely. You have to believe very strongly in what you're doing, unless, of course, your character is written as kind of wishy-washy, and then they believe in their wishy-washiness. Do you know what I mean? But right. My characters, fortunately, have not been. Have to believe in what you're doing, and you gotta love it. You've got to love it. You know, unless of course it's written that you hate it. And then you have to be terribly conflicted, and my characters usually aren't conflicted. They go full steam ahead.
Speaking of daytime dramas, your role, of course, on General Hospital, with what's going on right now and the shutdown of basically everything, some soaps are getting dangerously close to running out of episodes to air.
I think we might have run out of episodes to air. I think General Hospital might have. In which case, I think we will re-air. We'll keep people up to date. I'm hoping we will, because when we go back, which I believe is mid-May, I think we're gonna pick up right where we left off, and probably we're on such a tight schedule now, and hopefully we're gonna go at an even greater clip. So the irony
of this is with the shutdown and everyone quarantining. The soaps are seeing some of the best numbers that they've seen in several years.
You bet. Because people don't have to DVR it. They don't have to, you know, wait to see it when they get home from work. It's probably going to be a saving grace for a lot of people in terms of keeping them sane and getting new viewers. Hmm. So, you know, yay for the quarantine in that one respect.
And again, even though there's the quarantine, there is still some buzz about you perhaps getting a nomination for Studio City as a daytime Emmy.
Isn't that lovely? Yes, I'm so grateful, lucky enough to have gotten a pre-nomination. So we will find out. It's mid-May, I believe, that the nominations are actually going to be announced. And that those were delayed a little bit. It was supposed to be mid-April, but now it's going to be mid-May. And I'm just hoping that everybody who's out there within the sound of your voice, who's a voter for the Daytime Emmys, will consider me. Yes, Best Supporting Actress for the role of Gloria for Studio City. And it will, again, for something like this, because I think Studio City has incredibly long legs, as they say. And there are so many things that a lot of us do, have done, will do, that are kind of passion projects for us, or we see the passion that someone else has, like Sean Kanan and Michelle Kanan, his wife, and we think, okay, well, I'm going to do it. And most of those things go nowhere. This, Studio City, is something that I believe firmly is going to continue. And is hopefully going to find a larger audience with a larger home. And a few Emmys wouldn't hurt that, people. Wouldn't hurt it at all.
Excellent. Well,
before
I let you go, one of the things we talked about many, many years ago on a previous chat we had is that you were doing some trapeze work. Are you still doing that?
Not only am I still doing it, but the answer is yes. But not only am I still doing it, I have a static trapeze at the end of my driveway, which is much different than a flying trapeze, and people can look up the difference, static or hanging trapeze. And my teacher is on her way over, so she's going to be coaching me. We're both wearing masks, and she's going to be coaching me from about 10 feet away. I'm still doing it, and I'm hanging.
Is that one of the things that helps keep your sanity while you are in this situation where we're all hunkering down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That and getting every project in my house completely done. I'm almost running out of things to do, which is crazy. It's crazy. No, I've done everything. I've organized drawers 5 times, some of them. I've made Valentine's cards for next Valentine's Day. I'm giving my dogs the brush down every day. They look at me and kind of go, oh, here we go. It's another brush down. Yay. Fun stuff. Keep insane.
Well, Carolyn, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I hope it's not another 5 years before we chat again. As I say to most people nowadays, thank you for being on the program, and please, please, please stay safe.
You stay safe, you stay healthy, you stay sane. And to all your listeners, you know, the same to you. Please, I want to see everybody back on the streets, or not.
Thanks, Carolyn. That's the delightful Carolyn Hennessy. She has so much going on. She's Diane Miller on General Hospital. She also plays Gloria in the digital drama Studio City. And we didn't even get to talk about her tween novel series called Pandora. Actually, you can go into the Stuff File program archives and find 2 previous visits with Carolyn there. She's on number 0306 from back in June of 2015, And also, way back on number 0041 from May of 2010, where she also talks about her tween series. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0557. And you'll find links to not only Carolyn's website, but also links to her previous appearances on the show, and also links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order her book series for tweens called Pandora. It might be a cool thing for your tweens, especially girls, to read while they're cooped up during this time. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, the best thing since sliced bread. No loafing here.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about how theme parks can survive in a post-COVID-19 world. Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter, and we have some book ideas that you might want to check out while you're in quarantine that have a quarantine-type theme. And, of course, we do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and, of course, on Spotify. Okay, here's a story that's just too weird for words. 40-year-old Davis, California resident Sean Lamar Moore was arrested on April the 12th and charged with burglary after allegedly stealing a specimen that was waiting to be tested for COVID-19 from the Sutter Davis Hospital. Authorities said hospital employees reported a person had entered the facility and removed the specimen. That evening, police were alerted that a sealed COVID-19 specimen was found in a shopping cart at a nearby CVS store. Police Deputy Chief Paul Doroshov said the specimen hadn't been opened or tampered with based on the security seals. He added, although the incident is very serious, detectives do not believe Moore intended to harm himself or others. You know, this could go one of three ways. Criminal, kooky, or kinky. And I really don't know which one is worse. A video posted online shows a couple approaching a group of 9 teenagers watching the sunset in Louisville, Kentucky. The man confronts the teens about their failure to follow social distancing guidelines. Things escalated, and the man can be seen shoving 3 of the women and grabbing the neck of another. Thanks to the video, police tracked down 57-year-old John Rademacher, who was arrested and charged with first-degree strangulation. Said police spokeswoman Jessie Halliday, obviously, we do not advise individuals concerned about social distancing to take matters into their own hands and confront people about it, especially in any physical way. Rademacher was placed on leave at his job. His job, you ask? He's a physician. Wow. Is this why people are encouraging physical distancing instead of social distancing? And by the way, shouldn't a doctor know that he shouldn't get that close to people at a time like this? Unless, of course, he's examining them. Or maybe this was all part of his fiendish plot. Maybe he doesn't want to go to work right now. In that case, problem solved. A mysterious fire at a U-Haul truck rental lot in Eugene, Oregon, was solved after police viewed security video of what happened. In the video, a man in a vehicle and a woman standing at his window can be seen having an argument. At one point, the man lit a small firework and tossed it toward the woman. The video shows she ducked, and it hit the ground and exploded in sparks. The man then drives away. The couple apparently didn't know there was another man under one of the trucks stealing gasoline from it. He spills some on the pavement, and the firework lit it on fire, which eventually spread to four trucks. Two of them were destroyed. The woman ran from the fire, but the thief took some of the fire with him. He can be seen running with his pants and sleeve aflame. Police identified the firework thrower from his license plate registration so quickly that he was arrested before the fire was fully extinguished. He's been charged with reckless endangering and criminal mischief. The thief, however, was not identified. Well, not by police at least, but he probably gave his name to the emergency room staff. For now, let's just call him Sparky. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a car full of teenagers crashed in Idaho after authorities say one of the passengers lit the driver's armpit hair on fire with a lighter. All five young people in a Ford Bronco were hurt in the crash and had to receive medical treatment. Authorities say two of the passengers were thrown from the vehicle, but none of the five suffered life-threatening injuries. The Ada County Sheriff's Office says the rollover occurred after a 16-year-old boy was goofing off in the front seat and lit 18-year-old Tristan Myers' armpit hair on fire while Myers was driving. Deputies cited Myers with inattentive driving, while the 16-year-old was cited with interfering with the driver's safety. Just a second here. I understand how the kid with the lighter is culpable, but charging the driver with inattentive driving? Seriously? How attentive would you be as a driver if your armpit hair was on fire? I mean, give the kid a break. And maybe a skin graft. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Whenever we get past this COVID-19 pandemic, society will try to get back to normal, or perhaps what will become the new normal. So, when it comes to entertainment like amusement parks, what will the future hold for them? To discuss this, we are joined once again by Pete Trabuco, a travel and theme park expert. He's the author of A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks, and he's on the line from New Jersey. Hi, Pete.
How you doing? Hope everything is well where you are.
That's as best as can be expected. Thanks once again for being on the program with us. Now, since you basically spend most of your time writing, enjoying, talking about things like amusement parks, I think you're the best person to kind of describe this situation. In your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine something like this can happen? And how do you envision a return to something close to normalcy?
Well, being in the healthcare profession, and basically I was involved with the AED, the defibrillators that everyone now has, and promoting those in the state house, and being around politics and healthcare, there was always that chance of a pandemic actually getting out of hand. And we've all seen the movies before, and this is very similar to a lot of that, what's going on there. So yeah, it was expected. It wasn't if, it was really when. But being a roller coaster enthusiast and being involved in roller coasters, thrill rides, and of course flying and travel and all that stuff, it is something that in my 60 years on this planet I've never seen. Hopefully we'll never see this again. We'll be a little bit smarter when it comes to realizing the situation and maybe reacting a little bit quicker than we have. I guess a lot's going to be learned from that. But as far as the amusement park industry is concerned, this is I wouldn't say a death blow, but I would say that it is a situation where you probably will not see any new rides at attractions at any of the amusement parks for at least a couple of years as they recoup the losses that are going to be occurring, obviously, this year. I mean, in January, they stopped closing parks in Asia and in Europe, and then, of course, we're not going to open here in the United States or in Canada probably for at least the next couple of months, or at least a month or two. And then at that point, there's going to be a situation of how you actually let people come in. And so, yeah, I've not seen anything like this ever before. And it's a learning experience for everyone with regards to the new normal, as it's going to be called from this day forward.
Now, at press time, there's some interesting developments that have taken place that kind of caught my eye. For instance, analysts estimate that Disney has lost $500 million just from closing its parks through March alone. And that recently Disney in Florida, Disney World, announced 43,000 employees would be furloughed beginning April 19th. And they join the estimated 30,000 employees furloughed at Disneyland in California and an unspecified number of employees working in cruise production and corporate roles. And speaking of cruises, because that's something else that, you know, you really can't do social distancing. This I find rather interesting. And it may bode well or bode doom for the parks as well, depending on which side of this equation you come down on. In the last 45 days, CruiseCompete.com, an online cruise marketplace, has seen a 40% increase in bookings for 2021 as compared to 2019. So I'm guessing that people are having cabin fever and they're optimistically looking ahead to what they can do to combat that in the future when things get back to some sort of normal. And this concerns me because I get the feeling when we get not necessarily an all clear, but a somewhat clear, that some people might throw caution to the wind.
This is absolutely true. And all you have to do is look on social media, on the Facebook pages or Instagram or any of them, where you're actually now seeing families that have not seen each other for 3-4 weeks actually celebrating Easter because I live in the Newark area, in the New Jersey area, which is the worst hit throughout the world. And you're starting to see people, slack off a little when it comes to social distancing, which can start another second effect. You're right. A lot of people are booking for next year. They think it's going to be probably at that point there will be some kind of a vaccine that will take place. But we cannot, and that goes for everyone around the world, cannot let our guard down until that vaccine is done and completed and tested. Basically, the new norm is going to be what we see now. Again, in New York City and New Jersey, in the United States, and I'm just including in that, if not Canada or the rest of the world, almost half of all the deaths and cases are coming out of the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut area. So, and that's where I live. So basically, we are definitely on lockdown for a very long time. And I'm just hoping, like you, that people don't put down their guard, continue doing this, because it's going to still remain there until we come up with a vaccine for that, and we'll see what happens. But it's a pretty scary situation, but at the same time, I do feel, we are resilient enough. We've gone through this many times before, maybe not on this level or this scale, but we're a very resilient species, and I think we'll be fine. As far as the amusement parks are concerned, you're right. It's going to be a death blow to a lot of the smaller parks, the family-owned parks, like Clementon, for example, as it comes to mind, or Lake Compound, so these are in the United States, that basically rely on this. But it is what it is. We just will have to hunker down, and hopefully within the next couple months, things will be a little better.
Well, when we do get back to whatever the new normal will be, when it comes to theme parks, the situation like social distancing. I mean, one of the things people think about when they think of theme parks, the negative side of theme parks, especially places like Disney World and Disneyland, is the long lines. I mean, I would assume those days are gone where you could have the long lines of tightly packed people. Do you expect that, for instance, theme parks will require people to have their temperature taken when they enter or other precautions like that?
Absolutely. That is probably going to be a foregone conclusion, because the bottom line is you can't let anyone in that park if their temperature is. And that's going to obviously negatively affect guests and so on. But that's going to be probably the norm for at least the near future. Plus also limits to the park. I mean, normally, let's say Magic Kingdom in Orlando, Florida, you're getting about 100,000 people that come in on a daily basis. That will probably be cut maybe more than even half that will be allowed in the park for social distancing. And, of course, when you go on a ride, you're going to be spaced out. Obviously, it's not going to be right next to each other unless you're family members. And, again, that's something that's going to have to work out. But here's something that people probably didn't even think of. You know, when you go to a Disney park, you put your fingers down and that's your way into the park, you know, onto the actual mat or whatever you want to call it. That can't be done. That will no longer be done until this is all taken care of, because your fingers are touching and other fingers are touching and so on down the line. There's no way of actually doing that. So that will probably go by the wayside, at least for now. And, of course, Disney will come up with a new way of doing that. But in the meantime, it's probably going to be the old style of basically just checking tickets and going from there. So that's another thing that's going to go on. Plus, here's something else. You cannot do an inside ride. So places like, again, bringing up Disney, Magic Kingdom, you can't go on Space Mountain. You can't go on Rock and Roller Coaster. Any place that's indoors, because of the fact that, again, you cannot, test the waters or basically, have people secure in places that are closed off like that. Plus, you might have to also wipe down the rides every single time someone rides. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are going into it. And that doesn't even include the economic impact. I mean, Six Flags Great Adventure, for example, has got, dozens of parks. And they basically, add rides kind of like Cedar Fair does with Canada's Wonderland and of course, other places. And unfortunately, this is going to be a gut punch to the entire industry, especially for those that were expecting new rides to take place. So it's going to be a tough time for amusement parks. And when you think about it, in the past, people would go to amusement parks to forget their trouble. During recession, you'd find a lot of people going to Disney or to Universal or to Cedar Fair or to Six Flags just to get away from turmoil and their jobs and any situations for a couple of hours. But in this particular case, you can't even do that. So, we're in areas that we've never been before, and we're learning, hopefully, every day.
You mentioned inside rides. I'm thinking more of the outdoor rides. You know, a lot of rides at amusement parks, they involve G-forces, centrifugal force. Let's just take a simple roller coaster, for instance. The idea of someone sitting at the front of the roller coaster, they're screaming, they're waving their hands, water droplets are coming off of them and hitting everyone behind them. Something we don't think about normally, but I think we have to think about it now.
Absolutely. Obviously, most people when they're on a roller coaster ride, and I used to tell people to do this, in order to enjoy the ride and not feel, faint or get real upset or get basically throw up, or what you would do is you would scream. Now, in an airplane, when I was flying, I would grunt. That keeps the blood up into the upper extremities so you don't pass out or brown out. Screaming, obviously, is going to allow you to open your mouth, and obviously, if you're just a normal person, spit will come out, and bodily fluids will come out while you do that. And unfortunately, you're right; it will head towards the back of the train and probably hit somebody or splatter somebody in the face. And God forbid, it's even worse where maybe they lose their cookies. And that's happened many, many times, and that does that as well. So there's a lot of situational issues that the amusement parks are going to have to figure out. Maybe they won't have the most intense rides open, at least for now. Maybe you'll have to wear a mask while you're on these rides. There's a bunch of things that are going to have to go down the path. But I want to look at from the other end as well. You know, the idea of basically staying home for the next year is not thrilling to anyone. We've got to learn to adapt. We've got to learn to adjust. And we've got to learn to live our lives every day, one day at a time, and enjoy everything that we have, family members and so on. So there is a way out of this before we get some kind of a vaccine. But we just got to be patient to see what that is. And, you can enjoy yourself just on a little kiddie ride as long as you've got kids or just feel young at heart. So the amusement parks are going to have to be very creative on what they're doing and how they're going to do it in the future.
Pete, it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you. Stay safe, my friend, especially considering you are in the New Jersey area. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Pete Trabuco, author of A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0557, and you'll find links to Pete's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. At some point, we will get back to normal. So in the meantime, you can pick up Pete's book and daydream about when we can all go back to the amusement parks. His book can be a great distraction from what we are all living through. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And live from his Book Banter Bibliotheque Bunker, it's Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Love the alliteration there. I thank you very much for that.
I know you have so many books. You have large bookcases. Do you have all your books 6 feet apart from each other?
Well, sort of. I mean, I have some in my room. I have some in the den. I have some down in my storage locker. Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yes, it's we live in interesting times, as the saying goes. The reason why we're making all these references to quarantine is once a year, as you know, and some of our listeners know, we do a once a year roundup of books that you can read when it comes to the holiday period. We only do that once a year, but I thought it would be a good idea to do a roundup of books that one can read during a time of quarantine that have an isolation or solitary kind of plot line or storyline.
Yeah, you're basically confined to one place.
So what have you come up with, sir, that would be good for this?
Well, after I spoke to you, about when you approached me about this this topic, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and there are some books available that you could read, you know, confining books, literally. First off, you got Stephen King, had the ultimate book in that respect, Misery, which was released in 1987, you know, a story of Paul Sheldon, the famed best-selling romance writer who, after writing one of his last books with his Misery Chastain character, car goes off a cliff in somewhere in Colorado, gets rescued by Annie Wilkes, who is the nurse and all nurses, I guess. She's he finds out she's his biggest fan and reads the book, finds out that he killed Misery, and then confines him to, while he's healing, to write another Misery book to bring her back to life. But he has, you know, where else is he going to go? He's in a wheelchair. You know, both his legs are broken, and he's got no choice. He's either write it or die.
Yeah. What a uplifting kind of story that is. And by the way, when you think about Stephen King, he's got way too many titles in this particular genre category. And I'm not saying horror. I'm talking about people who are, for one reason or another, alone or confined.
Yeah.
He has way too many.
Well, I mean, in the beginning, he used to write from his home in Maine, and now he's writing from his home in California.
Yep.
So maybe he's confined to his very large study, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so Misery is one. I had several titles that I was thinking of. Misery was at the top of my list. I also mentioned The Martian. Have you read that one?
I've read that one, but I've seen the movie with Matt Damon.
Okay.
And, that's one place to be left alone.
Yeah. Bird Box, which is another book made into a movie. Life of Pi, which is another book made into a movie. I thought you might have something to say about Lord of the Flies.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was sort of, when you were in high school, that was one of the required reading in English class. That was William Golding's novel. It was made to a movie twice, once in the 60s and one, and again, I think, in the 90s, about a group of boys, private school boys, who survive a plane crash to a deserted island, and they start their own society, which ends up being quite deadly, actually, between the intellectuals and the hunters. That's their own civilization gone wrong, but there's no adults there to teach them right from wrong or to steer them right. They make their own society from this deserted island that, you know, out of a sense of survival. But a great book, nonetheless.
I also had on my list two other books that you probably had to read in school.
Yeah.
One of them was The Little Prince. Did you have to read that one?
I actually didn't have to, but it was read to me when I was in elementary school.
Ah.
So that's a book that takes place in the desert.
Yes. Yes, by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Yeah, Go ahead.
No, I was about to say it's just a great story. Another great story that was turned into a movie and turned into a musical of all things. And when I say of all things, at a time when a lot of musicals weren't being made in the 70s, and it's a great little film. It's a wonderful book as well.
Oh yes, it is, and it's still quite a classic. In children's literature, and also adults can read this one too and enjoy it. There's a lot to take in. Oh yeah, the movie actually starred Gene Wilder and Bob Fosse. I do remember that.
And Richard Kiley, who was the lead.
Oh yeah, can't forget Richard Kiley.
Now
what's the other one?
Well, the other book, you know how you in school we used to sometimes read books that were actually plays that were turned into books.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that comes to mind that I remember reading in school was Death of a Salesman. And no, that's not the book I'm referring to as far as Isolation is concerned. But the other great play that was done in book form was 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yes. By Reginald Rose. It was originally a TV play
you
know, in the era of the golden age of live TV drama. And then became a great movie in 1957 with Henry Fonda. Three Oscar winners, Henry Fonda, Martin Balsam, and Ed Begley, and also with Jack Klugman, Lee J. Cobb, who should have won an Oscar for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And also, it's available in paperback these days. It's part of the Penguin Classics line of books. And it's about basically 12 jurors who on a hot day in New York, sometime in the late 50s, is basically sequestered in the jury room to decide the fate of a teenage boy who's accused of stabbing his father to death. And it's basically Henry Fonda plays that lone juror who has reasonable doubt, and he convinces the other jurors one by one from changing their votes to from guilty to not guilty. And it's just amazing how it's so well crafted. Very powerful play. Very great movie also.
Yeah. And if you want a similar story that's a modern version of that, somebody else who is doing a story that fits that particular genre, there's a book called The Holdout by Graham Moore, which is a modern juror novel. So that's something you might want to look into if you want to, you know, follow down this rabbit hole of Isolation. Now, when we were talking, and just in passing, I've got to mention somebody else who does stories that are of this genre, Agatha Christie's two great novels, Murder on the Orient Express, which is an amazing novel. It's been made into a film a couple of times. The films were both, I thought, very well done. But the book is just amazing when it comes to Murder on the Orient Express. Of course, there is a death involved on the train, and Hercule Poirot.
A snowbound train at that.
A snowbound train, and Belgian detective Hercule Poirot has to figure out who the murderer is, and it's got quite an interesting twist at the end. I won't say anything, but it's a fun read. And another Agatha Christie book is And Then There Were None.
Yeah, and I read that a couple of summers ago, and I mean, if you're going to rank Agatha Christie novels, I think Murder on the Orient Express is number one, and Then There Were None is number two. And instead of a snowbound train, this one is a manor in a remote English island where these 10 guests, you know, they come for a weekend away, and one by one, they're eliminated.
Yeah. Now, we have very little time, but I have to bring up an item that you sent to me via email, and it just made my blood boil. As everyone knows, I'm the biggest James Bond fan in the world. I have all the books. I read them all on my Kindle. I have all the movies on DVD. I've seen them from in the theater on the first day that they opened up, literally all of my life. I have the soundtracks on vinyl. I'm a big James Bond fan. You brought up The Spy Who Loved Me, which was Ian Fleming's book from 1962. Your thoughts on the book, and I'll give you mine. I bet you they will not concur.
Well, I mean, I read the book also a long time when I was a teenager, and it's one of his most unusual books because it all takes place in a motel somewhere in the Adirondack Mountains. And it's told from the point of view of a young French-Canadian girl named Vivian Michel about her exploits and what her situation is, how she ended up in this hotel in the Adirondacks. And the thing is, James Bond doesn't appear until about two-thirds way through the book.
Yeah.
And all right, so I'll admit, From Russia with Love is my favorite Bond book of all time. But it just so happened that Spy Who Loved Me, and I don't mean the 1977 movie version, it fit the bill. It fit the bill of this segment.
Yes, that is one of the only things I can say. Now, let me go one step further. You mentioned books that you had to read in high school.
Yeah.
Do you remember how sometimes you'd read a book that you'd have to read in high school and you would say to yourself, how am I managing to slog through this thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I can honestly say, and I didn't have to read the book in high school, but I read it because I was determined to read all of Ian Fleming's books, in the order in which they were written. So I can honestly say that there isn't a book that I've ever read from cover to cover that I hated more than The Spy Who Loved Me. It is the worst book I have ever read through. And by that I mean, sometimes if you're reading a book that you can't stand, you just toss it away at whatever point you say, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I read this book from cover to cover and hated every single page. So much so that I did a deep Google dive to find out reviews of the book when it first came out in 62.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a loved book by the reviewers. I felt so vindicated.
And probably felt so cheated also.
And those who liked the book said they admired the chance that Fleming took because he was trying something from a different perspective and a different view. In other words, it was an experimental book for Fleming himself. That's how they described it. And they said, you know, for lack of a better term, sometimes you got to swing for the fences and sometimes it's a swing and a miss. This is a massive swing and a miss. And the only only positive kudos I saw for him were the fact that he tried something that didn't necessarily succeed.
No wonder I had a Bond collection, and usually I had like two or three copies of each book, you know, like movie tie-in edition, hardcover edition. That was the only book I only had one copy of. I didn't bother getting other editions of it.
Yeah. There's no need. There is no need.
I guess you're right, Peter.
Yeah.
I guess you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, sir, out of all these books, and we're running out of time, out of all these books, is there any one that stands out that you say, you know, to somebody, if you want to read this, read it now?
Well, I think there's one that we forgot to mention that is quite important, and it's The Diary of Anne Frank.
Yes.
And, you know, she wrote that diary while, you know, hiding in an annex in her home in Amsterdam during 3 years of while the Nazis, they were hiding from Nazi occupation. And this is not just a frivolous diary. This is of a young woman in bloom during a very difficult and tragic time in history. So, yeah, I think I'd recommend that one, actually, for a serious book. But for an entertaining one, got to go with Murder on the Orient Express.
Absolutely. Great titles, indeed. Something people might want to read when they're in isolation. Stuart, when you're not in isolation, where can you be found? Very quickly.
Well, in the Montreal Times, in print, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Stuart Nolman, locked away on Book Banter. Thank you, Stu.
You're welcome, Peter. Now get me out of here.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about at a racetrack on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have one more item to get to, and you know what that is. Yes, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
22-year-old Furquan Mohammed started his very bad encounter with the law enforcement on April 11th when he sped off after being pulled over in Monroe County, Georgia, for not having a license tag. Georgia State Patrol spokesperson Lieutenant Stephanie Stalls said that as the car sped by, troopers saw there were other passengers in the fleeing vehicle that appeared to be children. The chase went on through four counties until Mohammed crashed into a state trooper's car, which then caused a chain reaction involving four police vehicles and injured two troopers. Along with Mohammed in the car, deputies said they found four children ranging in ages from 9 weeks to 15 years old, marijuana, Xanax pills, a firearm, and $2,000 in cash. Mohammed was arrested on multiple charges. You know, in these trying times, with all the schools out, even criminals have to now spend more time with the kids. But seriously, why? Oh, why? Would you think it's a good idea to be driving around with a car with no license tag, full of kids, drugs, guns, and cash? And why would you think that after all of that, you can outrun the police? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0557. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0557. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.